Hello and welcome to Quit Your Crappy Job, Finding Courage for Positive Change. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Quit Your Crappy Job. I am your co-host, Scott Wilson.
And I'm Jeff Hughes. It's great to be here today, Scott.
Absolutely. And we have a really good guest today. Her name is Elise Orris, and she is the co-founder and head of strategy for the Wheels Up Collective. How are you doing today, Elise?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you here and have you share your story of your career transition or journey, perhaps, shall we call it. So before we get too much into this, everyone at this point knows about Jeff and I. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself, who you are, what you like? I don't know. Just a little bit of background about yourself to provide some context to the story you're going to be sharing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been a marketing professional, I guess you could call, for 20 years now, and kind of have a background that is a little bit broad. I have worked for startups. I've worked for large companies. I've worked for startups that have been acquired multiple times by larger companies. So I really focus on growth and scaling and how companies can use content marketing, especially, but digital marketing as a whole, to really tell their story in a more authentic and genuine way versus kind of just like throwing marketing speak down your throats. And I think one of my, we'll get into this as I talk about career changes, but one of the things I kind of hold passionate is like work-life balance and really taking time for yourself, your family, for the things that are important and that not really defining yourself by your job or your title or who you work for. So that's kind of a little bit about my professional background. And then personally, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, after living in Seattle and Detroit and from Detroit originally. And also kind of moved down here because, we were living in Seattle. I love Seattle, don't get me wrong, but I think we needed a different pace. We needed a kind of a slower place to live. And I love being down here.
Love the South. Yeah, well, it definitely has better weather than Detroit, right?
And Seattle.
A little bit less rain. Yeah, the funny thing about Seattle is it's the only place I've been in the U.S. where you're in freezing temperatures, and everywhere else it would be snowing, and there it's raining or misting, right? Yeah. It's incredible. So you get really wet. The snow will kind of brush off you, but there in the winter you can really get just soaked, right?
Yeah, and you don't use an umbrella. Can't do that.
Yeah. But yeah, Seattle's a beautiful city for sure. All right, perfect. Now, one point you and I had a conversation just to provide some additional context. You'd worked for a large software company we won't name, but you had told me you had traveled some crazy amount of miles in a year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, actually, this goes back for a couple companies. I previously worked at Microsoft. It was one of my first like really big travel jobs. I worked in events there for a Microsoft retail store. Amazing job, great opportunities. Got to hang out with rock stars, and it was just actually surreal when I think about it. But that meant I was on the road all the time. And there was actually one time we had multiple store openings in about a 3-week span in one November. And I think I was gone 49 days. I didn't come home.
Wow.
Because it was just easier to go to the next city than to fly back to Seattle. So that kind of started it. And then the following job, again, events was a big part of that role. So I was going from trade show to trade show to sales kickoff to this meeting in whatever city. And I think that kind of just, that felt normal. It was part of your job and that's what you did. And so my last company, it's kind of funny. I wasn't in events, but, I worked in the Bay Area, but living in Raleigh, and I had to go into the office about every 3 weeks. So I would commute. This is just so funny to think about. I would commute 3,000 miles about every 3 weeks. And that felt absolutely normal. My husband and I, for the first 3 years of our marriage, like didn't see each other very often. And that felt normal. So thinking back now, that all slowed in the pandemic or stopped in the pandemic. And then all of a sudden I was home for a few months and I was like, it's kind of nice to be home because I had never had that. And I I don't regret the travel. I love it. I have tons of hotel points and miles now to take vacations. But looking back, I do realize like it was grueling. It was tough. It was tough on relationships. It was tough on me just trying to plan a life and having friends in, especially moving to a new city. So, you know, it was probably one of the things I look back on now and think that was so weird that I commuted across the country on a plane, and something I probably won't choose to do again.
Awesome. And at some point during all your travels, didn't you have a like a blog or a travel something
that you did for a while? I actually still do. Okay. I still keep it up. Yeah, I started because I was traveling so much. It actually started as a joke because I was a couple coworkers and I, we would do a hotel room tour because we're all staying in the same hotels over and over again.
Right.
And we'd be like, okay, this is what you expect next week when you're at this hotel. And then that just, I was like, well, I might as well throw these on YouTube. Well, I might as well start a blog. It kind of started that way. And I keep it up far and few between, maybe 2 or 3 posts a year now. But it's funny. We'll talk about income streams later. But I actually make a very small income off of the YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
From hotel and campground reviews. So, you know, why not?
Why not? Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's your background. That ultimately led up to, the last job or some of the jobs you'd mentioned. You thought things were normal. What point, maybe even at your last job, were you just like, it wasn't so much fun. It became, as we call here on our show, a crappy job.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily crappy bad, but it was enough for you to want to make a change. What went on and what's the background there?
So, a lot of things. I think it's one of those, like, a lot of little things added up to one big thing. You know, at my last company, it was weird. This is pre-pandemic. And I think mind shift has happened since then. And I think that I don't know if this even still happens at this company that I was previously at. But the culture was one of that, like, just work, you know, fly across the country every 3 weeks. That's normal, that type of thing. People were working multiple time zones. I actually ran teams in Japan, in Seattle, and then didn't run a team in London, but had stakeholders in London. So I was just across time zones all the time. And that was a little crazy. Then, you know, a 13-hour day was pretty normal. And when I'm talking 13-hour day, I don't mean like, oh, I'm online and I take a break. I just would get online and just somehow all of a sudden it'd be like 8 p.m. and I'm still working. So, and that just kind of, I felt like it was expected. And of course, if you tell your manager or whatever, they're like, oh, that's not expected, but it kind of was. And then, you know, the other thing, I think there was just a culture shift. A new CMO came in, new CMO brought all of his former, you know, people that had worked for him at his last company. And it was just a really big shift. And all of a sudden things, processes that we had were changed, and sometimes they were for the better, sometimes they weren't, in my opinion. And it just was not a good fit for me anymore. And I felt, you know, because of the culture the company created, there were people that were fine people outside of work, wonderful, lovely people. But at work, I think that they were so stressed too, that just there was a lot of attitude. And I would find myself, first of all, not sleeping, which is a very important thing to me. I'd find myself not sleeping a lot and be, you know, have like the Sunday scaries where on Sunday night, you're just like, I don't want to go to work tomorrow. And started really thinking to myself, I'm like, this isn't okay. Like, this doesn't feel good anymore. And, you know, I was working in tech. It pays very well. Don't get me wrong. But I started really thinking about, okay, like, what are other income streams I can have where I don't need to work as much, where I can say, okay, I'm good making this amount of money per year at a job. But then I know that I might have this income stream or this income stream to kind of supplement some of that extra money I'd make if I'm working at like a really fast paced tech company. So that's kind of, I think, I woke up and I was just like, there's got to be something better.
I think a lot of people are probably in that same predicament, especially in tech. Like you said, the money is alluring. I mean, they pay very well.
Yeah.
But the expectation is super high that, you know, you have to work 12, 15 hour days. And even on the weekends, you got to, you know, whatever it takes. So that's, I think a lot of people are in that boat where they love the money, they love the income, but it is grueling, and eventually it takes its toll.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's true. A couple of things So software engineering on the software side, like when I was writing code, it was a similar thing. You weren't traveling, but the deadlines you're under is incredible. And you're creating stuff. So it's not like working on a car where it's pretty measured and you know how long it should take. You're trying to solve problems. And so you don't know how long it takes, but you have to get it towards a deadline. So working weekends and all this stuff gets very grueling. But having transitioned to a similar role like you did, Elise, just to provide some context for the audience, I ran a global services implementation services or professional services organization. And so I had employees in Israel and I had them across all the US, Europe. And so the typical day, right, when I'd get up at 6 a.m, I could already take meetings for the folks in Israel and Europe. And I often would because we needed stuff to get done, right? They already had a client site. They needed help. There's something. And then in California, of course, 6 p.m. when they're ready to shut down, well, that's 9 p.m. my time. So, right, I'd work from 6 to 9. But then with the Israeli contingent that I had, their weekends begin Thursday night, right? Their weekend is Friday and Saturday. So I found myself also working Sundays because that's when their Monday is.
Yeah.
And so without even thinking about it, you could eat, if you have a big team, like you said, you could have a 1 day weekend and not even blink and realize that's what's happened to you. Right.
Yeah. And then end up answering emails on that day too.
Well, that's your catch up day, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Did you ever get to a city or wake up in the morning and realize you didn't remember what city you were in?
All the time. I used to play that game with myself waking up at the hotel because you always stay. I tend to stay at Hilton's for the most part, and they all kind of look alike. So I'd be like, okay, I'm in a Hilton. Great. What city? What day is it? What month is it? Where do I work? I don't know. Just like you ask yourself those couple of questions in the morning. And you know, that part was actually kind of fun every now and then when you did get to go to a new city. When I worked for Atomic Software back in the day, which I loved that company, loved working for them. We went to many trade shows. And so that was fun because you would maybe explore the city a little bit, or sometimes you'd go to maybe a sales meeting in Chicago and it would be downtown. You get to do cool things. But at my previous job, I went to the same hotel every 3 weeks. So after a while, I didn't even want to go outside of the hotel. I just would order room service every night and that would kind of become my thing.
You know, and some of the little nuanced things, Elise, that maybe a lot of our audience isn't aware of when you travel like this. Like when I go to a hotel, I would keep the little sleeve to give the key cards in because it had the room number in, right?
Yeah. Well, you have to.
You'll forget, especially like you're saying, I would do that same thing. A lot of times you just start going to the same hotel because that's one less thing to have to worry about, right? Which means last week in room 214, this week you're in room 370. And
you know. I rely on the digital key for that because the digital key tells you your room number.
Yes. Yeah. Thank goodness. So now you don't have to do that. And
yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, I remember traveling. I think I was in New Jersey somewhere and I woke up in the morning and I walked out to the parking lot and there must have been 30 Ford Tauruses all lined up. And they were all rental cars, obviously, because everybody staying there was there for some company, you know. And I walked out there and said, something is wrong with this. I don't even know which car I'm driving.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's happened to me before, too. Right? I mean, probably a quick tangent. We'll get back to your story, Elise. But I remember going into Baltimore once, and we met with a couple of companies downtown Baltimore. So we parked in the public parking garage. For those who know where it is, it's like, I forget what street it's at, but it's all underground under the main street. That has to be the most confusing parking garage I've ever seen. I know it wasn't just me and the guy I was with, because we started walking around just clicking the car because we couldn't remember which car it looked like, because it looked so many. And then we had no idea where it was. And we weren't the only ones. So it became very confusing because everyone else is walking around trying to beep to find their car. And we'd hear, oh, that should be us. And we see some guy or gal over there clicking like, oh, that's not our car. It took us 20 minutes to find our car. Anyway.
Yeah.
First world problems. But anyways, at least so at some point, though, at one of your jobs before getting to where you're at, everything you just talked about, it was fun, but tough. It some point reached a point of being unacceptable. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think you know, I don't know if it was that I'm getting older and I was tired, or I actually can't tell you what the one thing was. I think it started happening around April of 2020. So, you know, we're in the pandemic. The pandemic has started. We're all work from home, which I mean, I always work from home anyway. But and my company at the time did a very large layoff and did it in a very, let's just say, crappy way. People found out they're getting laid off because a lump sum ended up in their bank account.
Wow.
And
with no warning.
Their severance. Yeah.
So lump sum, no warning. Just.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I think what happened was the bank probably got ahead of it. And so everyone got deposits. They saw deposits like on Saturday or Sunday. And everyone's like, that's weird. So they found out on Monday they were getting laid off with a mass email.
Wow.
So that just like kind of, I think that was like, oh, this is not part of like my values. My values are, you know, if you're anybody that's ever worked for me, I just make sure that always tell them like how grateful I am, how much their hard work means to me. Because, you know, if you're at a job and you're working 13 hours a day, you're spending more time with me or, you know, with your coworkers than you are your family than anything else. And it just like, that was one of those things that just really hit one of my core values of it wasn't hard to have each manager reach out and say, hey, like we have to do a layoff. I mean, layoffs happen. We all know it, but just how it was done just felt so like cold. So I think that was kind of like it for me. And then I heard another round was coming and I kind of nicely talked to HR and said, hey, are there exit plans? I just kind of put a couple seeds. I don't know if I would have got laid off had I not done that. I probably would have based on it. But the next layoffs came out in June and I was in it. And I will tell you, it was just like this sigh of relief. I know you're supposed to feel bad when you get laid off and it's supposed to be this whole thing. But it was actually like, I was like, okay, I'm free. And like everyone else, I just got an email. No human ever spoke to me, which is a little daunting. But, you know, I got that email at 9. I'd already been up working because I had a meeting with the Japan team. So I was up, I think, a couple hours before that. And got the email and I read it. I called my husband in and I said, hey, I don't have a job anymore. and he's like, okay, well, do you want me to make you breakfast? It was just this wonderful transition. And we had a big breakfast.
That's awesome.
And it was a great day. But I think really, you know, going back to like what led me there is I also knew that, like I said, I knew another round was coming. There were rumors happening. So in those 2 months, I really did a lot to kind of prepare myself for it. And some of that was, you know, the simple things you do, like start networking, clean up your resume, that type of work. But then also, we bought a brand new truck and a brand new trailer while I still had a job. So, you know, they'd give me a loan for it. And we'll get into that about what I did after that. But, you know, I think for me, it was just this, the fact that it was a sigh of relief when I was let go was really just validation that I'm doing the right thing. Like I'm listening to my gut and listening to my intuition. And this just wasn't a good fit for me at the time in my life. And I'm super grateful it happened. You know, I worked at a company that did give severance packages, which was great. That allowed me some time to kind of think about what I wanted to do next, some breathing room. And honestly, I hadn't taken time off in years where I just actually had time off. I often just went from, you know, you leave one job, you go to the next, you leave one job, you go to the next. And I really was just welcoming a break for a couple weeks to not think about work and just kind of think about what was important to me, to my family, what we really wanted to do. And I'm actually like really grateful for that opportunity to be laid off and with some severance to think about it.
Right.
Sometimes things like that, I think in a lot of cases work to your benefit. I know I've been through situations where I've been laid off. At first I thought it was the end of the world, and then, and then other doors open up and other opportunities. And, you know, looking back, I see that, you know, that it was a good thing. Going through it is usually not a whole lot of fun, but looking back, it turned out well.
Well, except in your case, at least.
That's exactly how I feel.
You were just like, oh, that's a relief. Wait a minute. That's a relief. Right?
Yeah.
Now, did you have
anybody? It was not the feeling I expected. I will say that.
even though you sort of asked for it, it's, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, did you have anyone working for you for that first round? You said people got the severance on a weekend. I mean, if anyone's working for you, do you have anyone call you over the weekend or like, hey, is there something going on or anything like
Not
that?
Not on my direct team, but on peers' teams. Yeah. It was, I mean, it was a good portion of the marketing team, actually. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And just an email.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so impersonal. No, you know, I'm think I'm similar to you, Elise, and I know Jeff, you're the same way. I've had to let people go several times in my career. It's not something I enjoy doing. I don't think anyone that's decent likes it, but geez, I think people at least deserve a face-to-face conversation, right? To at least talk about it.
Right? You would think.
You would think. Yeah.
Well, and what's really funny is actually the company before that, we were purchased, and I actually was like, go buy an email there too. Now, we knew it was coming because we had been purchased by another company and we knew what the date was. And we knew that, like, we all knew this was happening. So it wasn't a shock or a surprise, but it was also kind of funny that that was an email as well.
Yeah. But at least there, it was something everybody knew. They're kind of expecting. And if they're a large number, especially post-acquisition, those.
It was very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that.
It was very well, like, documented and transparent. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's a right way to lay people off by email, and there's definitely a wrong way. And the surprise is definitely a wrong
way. I still don't think there's a right way. I think if someone's working for you, you should probably have, like, a conversation with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Personally, I would do that. At my company, but
No, that's pretty impersonal. That's just not a way to treat people.
No, exactly. Not at all.
No.
So did you talk to anyone, Elise, when you were thinking about maybe I might want a package, maybe I might want to be the next one? Or is it just, you said you just followed your gut and just went with it?
Yeah, I kind of followed my gut. I didn't even actually go say, hey, I'm me next, right? You have to be careful. So it's your job.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like put out there to a couple people in HR, like, hey, if there's more packages, is there a way to volunteer for one? It was just very hypothetical speak, but just letting people know that I was kind of ready.
You talked about the Sunday scary.
Dropping coming a few hints.
Yeah. But did you have any of those scaries saying, wow, this could be it?
No, actually, at some point, I think I was
done.
You know, it's weird because you want to stay at your job, especially someplace you've worked for a while. You want to stay, and you put so much work and hard effort and good work into it. And I think there's always that that thought, like, it could get better, or, you know, maybe I can help turn it around, or maybe I can stick out till the next leadership change. And, you know, you have all of those thoughts, of course, and you know, if I wouldn't have been let go, I probably would still be there right now, honestly. So I don't really think that, like, once I talked to HR, I don't think I was like scared or anything like that. I just think, let's just see what happens.
So
but it was not a surprise when I was let go, is what I'll say.
But what was a surprise is the relief you felt.
Yes.
And your husband made you.
I definitely thought I'd be sad.
Do you think that it was because of the preparation that you had put in? Did that help quite a bit, or was that just a small?
Probably.
Part of it? Yeah.
Probably. And I also, I will say this. I thought I had a couple more months. I didn't think they were going to do a June layoff. I thought the rumor was July or August. So I think a couple months early was a surprise to me. And I think, you know, you're like, you always want that extra money if you can. And you know, I talk about this now also 2 years out. I think at the time there's pain and sadness when you are let go from your job, especially, you know, this particular company, I felt like I gave my all the time. And I had referred like 7 people that worked there, they don't all still work there, but they all were still made it through the layoffs, which was a weird feeling for me a little bit. So, you know, in the moment, I probably was a little bit more upset than I am now talking about it, especially 2 years post, where I know all the great things that have happened since. But all in all, like I said, the part that it was a relief, like it, And I think that that's something that I try to take with me is that, you know, you're served a situation that that's surprising or not. I mean, it wasn't terribly surprising for me, but it was surprising for some. And it's surprising. It's devastating in some senses. I mean, you're losing your job. That's
right.
How you pay for your family and your life and your lifestyle. But I think that it doesn't always mean it's a bad thing. And sometimes, like in my case, it actually ended up being like the thing that was the greatest thing that could have happened to me at that time.
That's awesome. So yeah. You mentioned your husband made you breakfast. You felt relieved to leave the company. So what happened then? Yeah. How did you respond now that you were laid off?
So it's funny because this would have never happened had the pandemic not been here. But my husband, he works for an airline, a major airline, and they offered this wonderful package to not come to work for 18 months, but still be an employee, still get partial pay and still have insurance and benefits and everything. Wow. So he took that offer because it was, why would you not? And we decided to hook up our trailer to our new truck and go on a road trip for 3 months. That was originally the plan, was we were just going to go for 3 months. We left on June 22nd of 2020, and we were supposed to come back in September. And then we didn't come back in September. We just kept going. So and what's funny about that is, like, the first few months we were fine. There was some severance pay package. We had some savings and everything. But after about a couple months, and I loved not working, by the way. I don't know why people are like, oh, working's wonderful. I'm like, I can't wait till retirement. Apparently I had my little taste of it. I'm like, I can't wait till that happens. But it was, you know, it was a great, we spent most of our time in the summer in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where my family lives, where I went every summer as a kid. And I think that was just such a great place to decompress. Also remember, this is the time of like COVID starting to really ramp up, and where we were in the UP had like, they had no cases in the counties we were in. So that also took a little bit of pressure off too. I mean, we still were following all the COVID protocols, but it just, that pressure was reduced a bit. And we basically just did nothing for 3 months, and it was wonderful. And, but I think it was about August. So, you know, we left on June 22nd, about the end of August, I started to get a little restless, and I'm like, okay, I think I've decompressed from the last job. I think it's time to maybe start to figure out what to do next. But, and I would interview for jobs, and none of it, like, I would talk to these recruiters, I talked to hiring managers, I talked to former coworkers that were trying to like pull me into their company. And just, I kept just getting this feeling like, this just doesn't feel right. I'm not ready to go back full time. So I started thinking about, well, what if I consulted a little bit? And I started doing some small consulting work here and there. You know, my background actually is a content writer. So I was writing a white paper here and whatever else there. And then I really thought about, okay, I could just do this. It's paying enough. It, you know, contracting actually pays very well. Obviously you don't have the benefits and things, but I'm fortunate to have my husband's benefits. So I really started going down this, okay, I'm just going to freelance and contract and that'll be it. And I started putting together a guide of my offerings, kind of a menu of services, so I could start reaching out to people. And then my old coworker just called me kind of out of the blue. And she saw some posts on social that I didn't have a job. And so she's like, let's talk. Let's, you know. And turns out she also left her job, which I don't know if she would call it crappy or not, but it wasn't a good fit for her. She left her job, and we were both kind of in this, like, you know, waiting room of what do we do next? And she's really good at some stuff that I'm really bad at. And I'm really good at some stuff that she's really bad at. And during our phone call, we kind of figured that out. And so by the end of our phone call, which was about an hour and a half long, we decided, let's put on paper what we want to do, and let's compare and see if there's a crossover. So like 2 days later, we get on the phone again, and we're like, yes, we have a perfect blend of what we want to do. And by the end of Labor Day 2020, we had a functioning website. We had a business plan. We had documents drawn up. You know, we were a company. And it just kind of organically happened. We didn't know if it would work. We didn't know if this is something that we could actually sustain or pull off, but we're like, you know what? Let's try. And our first client was a friend. It was a very small company, which I think we ended up losing money on doing the work, you know, or not getting paid very much, getting paid like $12 an hour or something at the end of it. But, you know, it was a great like test. And then we started kind of getting these other small pieces of business in. And we learned, well, we made a lot of mistakes that were nothing like you can't come back from or something like that. So small mistakes, like maybe undercharging here or not scoping enough hours as to what something actually takes. And so it was great to kind of like learn this stuff off the bat, where it was really just kind of the two of us and like a couple other people that were helping here and there. And then we, I think in January of 2021 is really where we started to take off. We started hitting our networks of, you know, former coworkers who now are at all these other companies. And it just kind of worked out. We got a contract here. Another person referred us, and we just really started growing and growing our team. And, you know, as of, I don't know how many clients we have now, I think like 19 that are current retainer clients, but, you know, cause we're in spring of 2022 now, it just kept growing, and it's like, it's working. It's sustainable. We're, this is our job now. It's awesome. Kind of funny to think of it like that when it just started as a small idea. But I kind of skipped ahead there. But
yeah, well, I wanted to go back. Yeah, Elise, because you're saying, you know, in January, yeah, things started taking off. Were you still in this trailer, or at what point did you come back home?
Oh, yeah. So I was still in the trailer.
You were?
So yeah, I started my company from the trailer. Yeah.
That's great. Up in the.
Which is funny. So I should state, like, this isn't like we didn't have like a great bus or something. Like, people sometimes think of a trailer of like, no, our trailer is 160 square feet, 20 feet long. We have a dinette in it and a bed that's a Murphy bed couch. It's very small. So a lot of times I'd be on calls and, also in the middle of nowhere, you know, you're taking calls from the UP, for example, where we were in Lake Travis, it has no cell service. So I would have to drive to the grocery store, which has really good Wi-Fi, and sit in the parking lot of the grocery store for 4 hours a day and take my calls. So I'd have to block my calls. So there are some challenges there of starting. I don't necessarily recommend starting a business in a trailer in a place without cell service. But, you know, you adapt quickly. You get in RV groups and say, hey, what does everyone use for internet? And we started to kind of, you know, Chad and I, my husband, his name is Chad, we would get into our groove a little bit where he would go run errands when I had calls, or nicer places. If it was nice outside, I would go outside and have my calls. So we weren't necessarily on top of each other. And, you know, it kind of became a funny joke of with clients of like, where is she now? What's her background now? Because sometimes my background would be a trailer park, but other times I'd be like boondocking somewhere in Montana and there'd be these wonderful mountains behind me. So it was always fun to talk about. But, you know, I think starting a business in a trailer, in all honesty, is not that much different than at your own home. Minus the fact that you do always have to worry about, do you have cell service? Do you have internet? And sometimes you have to wake up early and go to the Starbucks or go to the library or wherever to borrow their internet to make sure that you are actually connected.
Wow. I suppose it's not much different than starting a company in a garage. You know, you hear the stories of HP starting in a garage. And back then they didn't even have Wi-Fi. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody has their challenges, but that's fascinating. What I mean, other than the internet struggles, what other challenges did you encounter along the way? Was it sounds like it was fairly easy to get customers, but what other challenges came about that maybe you hadn't anticipated?
Yeah. Hiring, okay. Which is like everyone's having a problem with that.
Yeah,
we are. You know, it's really cool. Our company kind of, there was a bunch of us that all had worked together in the past and everyone was kind of free. You know, one of our coworkers had just had a baby, so she didn't want to go back to work full time. One was in grad school. One just decided she didn't want to work at her last company either. So a bunch of, at the beginning, we had this like really great core group that was able to do most of the work. But then we started getting contracts that we wanted to take, but we didn't necessarily have the right skill set for. And sometimes finding that skill set was a little bit difficult. It still is, honestly, even with we have a lot of people that are contractors. And so they might only be able to, you know, be retained like 20 hours a week for us, where we need them like 30. So that becomes challenging here and there. Luckily, at this point, we've kind of solved that. But at the beginning, it was very challenging. And also that meant that my business partner and I were doing a lot of the execution work, which didn't allow us a lot of time to help grow the company, which, you know, we were lucky. And I'm really grateful that we had so many referrals from the work we had done. But I do, looking back, I think we should have probably put a little bit more emphasis on growing ourselves and marketing ourselves, and which we are doing now. But even now, like, we joke that the cobbler's kids, you know, they don't get their shoes or whatever that saying is.
Yeah.
We are doing a really good job of marketing ourselves as best we can. But I think that there's opportunities that we're missing still, because we are so focused on clients. And there are times, especially where if we can't hire like a marketing ops person, for example, I actually have a background in marketing ops. So I'll jump in and do execution, which isn't necessarily what I should be doing. I should be working on, you know, doing this, being on podcasts and growing our business a little bit more. So, you know, that's challenging across the board. I think that's everyone. The other challenging thing is we have this, it's one of our principles, is that we don't want to work with jerks, and we want like kindness is so important to us. And even when we hire new people, one of the biggest things we start to really look at is like, is this person kind? Are they going to have the best intentions when approaching situations? Is there a true, genuine, you know, just kindness? I keep going back to that word, but that's what it is. And I think that was a little challenging at first, because when you're first starting a company, you can't really be picky about clients. So we've been pretty fortunate to only have a couple situations where it didn't work out, where just I think that the personalities or like the type of relationship didn't work out. But at the beginning, I think we could be a little bit less picky about who we worked with, versus now we are able to have, you know, pretty good discovery calls. And I actually, really, the problem isn't people being jerks necessarily. It's more about the expectations of a company or of a person that we just don't think that we can fairly meet based on, or, you know, based on the amount of time or the amount of effort or the amount of budget that's available. So that was a challenge at first, is really figuring out what is that medium of we want to be picky, but we also need the clients. And, you know, how can we grow that, versus now where I think we're in a really good spot where we get to, I mean, all of our clients are amazing and great. And I'm not just saying that, like, they really are. You know, we talked about the Sunday scaries, and I don't have that ever. Even if I know there's a problem with a client, which, I mean, there inevitably is, right? You know, something will go down or something that we might not even have anything to do with. It might be just something happened within their org that we have to help with. I don't get nervous. I just am like, okay, let's tackle it. Let's figure it out. Because, like, really, we work with wonderful people. And I think that was one of my big goals, was to work with wonderful, kind people, and then also to have this work-life balance. And it's amazing how we're able to achieve both of those things with this company that we started.
Are you working less hours then, or still more, or they're more satisfying hours?
I do work less hours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different type of work. At my previous job, I was working consistently 13-hour days plus a few hours on weekends. So I'm working way less than that. Mm-hmm. I still work more hours than I probably would like to. If we could maybe figure out, I think I see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're in a position right now where we're growing, which is awesome. And it's, again, it goes back to the hiring. If we can like kind of figure out some of these hiring roles, I can work a little bit less. But I'm consistently at like a 45-hour week right now, which is, I mean, wonderful. There are weeks, obviously, that it's 55. There's a client launch. We had a client launch 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I worked a 10-hour day one day. But, you know, that used to be the norm. And now that's weird when you work a 10-hour day. And the other thing, I just have a little bit more freedom. For example, I'm able to just like take multiple walks during the day, which is so great for your, not even just your health, but like for productivity, to clear your mind. I generally take like one in the mid morning and one in mid afternoon. And, you know, you kind of start to feel that sleepy slump, you know, and sometimes you might go grab a coffee or whatever. Well, I find if I just take a 20-minute walk around the block with my dog, that just like wakes me up and I can get right back into my work. And it's amazing how I just didn't have time for that before because I'd be on back-to-back calls. And now I make that a priority, actually block it on my calendar. And I think that makes me better all across the board at work, at life, at home, everywhere. So while I'm not, like I said, I'm not working as little hours. I'd love to be at 40, but that's not going to be realistic for a while. And I think as long as I can kind of like create my own schedule, create the breaks I need, or, you know, sometimes I do leave early on 2 o'clock on a Tuesday because, you know, something's going on and that's not a big deal. I'm able to clear my schedule. So I think having that autonomy and the asynchronous work is a different type of 45-hour a week than when you're at you have to be at your desk, like, you know, 9 to 5 plus.
Yeah. I mean, you're obviously in control, way more in control now than back then, you know, at a company. That's excellent. Have you had any regrets or second guessing?
No.
As you've gone down this path?
No. And actually it's, you know, it's funny. I thought at first I was never going to be able to take a vacation. I was that scared. I don't know why I thought that, but, you know, I think it's kind of like in a weird narcissistic, founder type of way of like, nothing can work without me there. Turns out if you hire the right people, everything flows just fine without you there. So my only regret was that I was going to say I couldn't take like a 2-week vacation like I used to be able to do, but I don't think that's an issue at all. And I actually just took a vacation last week and I came back to everything wonderful and no issues. And it was amazing. And I, you know, of course, thanked everyone a million times over for, you know, being so great at their job to make it that I didn't even worry about it. I didn't even have anxiety when I was gone.
What was it, a vacation in your trailer?
No, unfortunately. It's actually, funny enough, it's at the trailer hospital right now. It's actually getting work done. So they need work all the time. But yeah, I think, you know, the only other, I wouldn't call this a regret at all. The only thing that I do worry about is we have, I think, 22 contractors and 6 full-time right now.
Wow.
And people rely on us for their livelihood. And that is a little bit, it's a lot. So I think that inspires both my business partner, Amy, and I to make sure that we are, you know, moving forward, finding new contracts for us, finding new clients, making sure that we're staying on scope with our current clients and being able to, you know, we need to make sure that everyone is taken care of and that this is, they're trusting us to work for us and they're trusting us to be part of what we're building. And we want to make sure that we can, you know, honor that trust and continue to, you know, just make sure that they're paid. Honestly, that's the big thing. Yeah. And so that is a little bit of it weighs on you sometimes. Thankfully we're at a position now, like I said, where we have a lot of clients. So I don't fear that as much, but at the beginning that was a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. So looking back, you know, Jeff already asked you about any regrets. What about lessons learned to anybody else who might be stuck at a job where they're like, I just don't know if I can go on?
Yeah.
What advice could you give now that you've gone through this?
Prepare.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, prepare. Find other income streams if you can. So, you know, we, and this is before housing went out of control, but we bought a rental house, for example, and have income from that. We have some digital creation income that comes in. My husband has some income that comes in from an investment he did and, you know, we have other investment type of income that comes in. So it's really diversifying and trying to figure out like, what are other ways that you can have income coming in that isn't your real day-to-day job. And that, you know, that took me a while to set up. That took me years to set up, but I think it was super important. And, looking back, I wish I would have set more up. Yeah. Especially after living in a trailer for a year, you realize like how much stuff you have that you don't need. And maybe we should put that money in savings. But so I think that's number one, is like really kind of like figure out ways that you don't necessarily need to rely on your full-time job for all of your income. And then the other thing is like start, you know, networking and start. The reason why we got so many clients is like we were networking, and, you know, start really nurturing those relationships and reach out to your old coworkers that are doing cool things. Talk to them. I mean, who knows? It's fun to catch up, one, but also they might be doing something cool that you're interested in. And the other thing that I think is like a really big deal, like embrace that change is going to happen and embrace that like it'll be okay. You can roll through it. And I will say this comes from a privileged place of working at a tech company and having a severance and whatnot when you leave your job. But I think if there was a way for everyone to like, just kind of realize like there might be a reason that this happened, that you're leaving this job or this job is letting you go, because there could be something better, or there probably is something better. And especially right now, I mean, there's a lot of jobs out there and they're paying a lot better than they used to. So I think if there's somebody in a crappy job right now, really like take a look at like what's important to them. What are their values? Do their values match the company's values? And if not, what else is out there? And start looking, and don't be afraid to make that change. And don't be afraid to like try a different industry or try a different type of role that might be a stretch. And actually, this is like a really important thing. One of the things I noticed with a lot of people I've helped, you know, transition jobs, is that a lot of times they won't apply for the job that they're not 100% qualified for. And I would say apply for the job that you're like 60% qualified for. And turns out that like the hiring manager is not going to get someone who's for all of these, but they're going to find someone 60, 70% that matches the description. So don't be dissuaded by if you don't have like this skill and this skill, but you have all the rest. I think go for that job, go for that better title, and go for that like opportunity that maybe you don't think you qualify for, because it might be surprising you might actually qualify for it, especially at a time right now where hiring is so difficult.
That's great advice.
Yeah. Well, Elise, I got to go back to something you said.
Yeah.
You had mentioned living in a trailer for a year. I think we kind of skipped that part. I didn't realize you'd lived starting this company for a whole year. I mean, yeah. Where did you go?
We started in Raleigh, North Carolina, kind of drove up through the UP of Michigan, stayed there for 9 weeks, went to Wisconsin, Minnesota, kind of down there, I can't even remember what roads. I think down to 70, which is in South Dakota, went that way, went through the Badlands, which, by the way, Badlands, most surprisingly amazing national park. I mean, I've heard it was beautiful, but yeah. I didn't really know how just stunning it was until we went there.
I've been there.
It's just, oh my goodness. It's just absolutely beautiful. It reminds me of like what zombie apocalypse would look like, I think, in a good way though. And then up through Yellowstone Glacier over to Seattle, stayed in Seattle for a while, stayed in Oregon for a while. My husband's family has a cabin in Bandon, Oregon on the coast. Stayed there for like a month. Came down to California. It was when COVID was like crazy and they closed all the campgrounds.
Oh, no.
So we had to, you could stay long term. So we're like, well, let's stay long term in San Diego then. And stayed in San Diego for a month and a half. And then went to Arizona, like did the Grand Canyon, all of that, through New Mexico, Texas. Oh my goodness, I can't remember what states now. Alabama, Mississippi, hung out in Florida for a bit, and then came back up through Georgia and South Carolina. It was a year totally. We were gone 11 months.
Wow.
And wow. And it's so funny because we were constantly moving, which seems stressful, but you're with your home. Your office is with you. Your home is with you. Everything you need is always with you. One challenge though, which is kind of funny, and we joke, we're like, why did we do this? We'd have moving days, like on Tuesday, let's say. And because a lot of times we were dictated by when we could be at campgrounds because everyone bought a trailer over COVID.
Right.
So let's say we had to move on a Tuesday and I'd have calls we'd have to map out our trip and say like, okay, well, here's a grocery store with cell service. Okay. So we're going to drive for an hour, go to the grocery store with cell service, take 2 hours of calls. Okay. And then my husband would grocery shop when I would do that. All right. 2 hours of calls done. We're going to drive another hour, then an hour of calls, drive another hour.
Wow.
And so it would take us like 8 hours to drive somewhere because we would stop for calls along the way. So that was challenging. And like I said, it seems so funny to think about now, but it's just kind of how we ended up moving across the way. And the other challenging thing is when you're traveling and you're like at really cool places, you don't want to be on a call when you're like, oh, beautiful mountains, I should be hiking right now. Yeah. And then my husband would meet people at the campground and go hiking or go kayaking or whatever. And he was doing really cool things and I was working. So, but, you know, I joke about, I'm not really complaining about that. It's just kind of a funny, you know, it's a little motivating, I guess, to like get your work done sooner when you're like, I can go hike afterwards.
Wow. That's now, is my math right? So basically you had about the first 3 months with nothing. And then the rest of that 11 months, you're doing what you just described.
Yeah. Starting and I was company. Working. And I will say the first few months of it, I was only working like 20 hours a week, but, come October, it was full. I was fully working with client calls and internal calls and all the calls.
That's amazing. And no Sunday scaries, like you said. So even with all the moving, it wasn't.
Yeah, no, not at all.
You know, Elise, that's the thing. I don't know what you think, Jeff, but for some of the folks we've talked to already, some of them have, you know, quit their crappy job to go into a place where they're working these crazy hours, but they're happier, or doing something else that requires a lot of time, but they're happier. Any thoughts why that is? I mean,
so I think anytime you can have asynchronous work or autonomy, you're going to be happier. And if you're doing something for yourself where it's your own business, there's just a different feeling. There's a different passion you have for it. And I think that's part of it. You know, you're growing something. And I don't know. We don't necessarily have end goals. Like we don't. Sure, if somebody wants to come in and swoop us up for a bunch of money, we probably wouldn't say no, but that's not our end goal, right? Our end goal is actually to make this be a sustainable job where we have a work-life balance. That's really our end goal. So I really think that if larger companies worked like smaller companies did, where you can have less meetings, you can have asynchronous work, you can have, you know, we don't have meetings on Fridays and we don't have client meetings on Mondays. We do have one internal, but for the most part, Mondays and Fridays are deep work days, which, oh my goodness. I get so much done on Mondays and Fridays. And had I had that at my real job, I'll call it, I wonder how much less stressed I would have been. So I think that larger companies or, you know, traditional companies can look at different ways of helping their employees obtain a better work-life balance, work less, maybe figure out what does that, you know, less meeting schedule look like, or can they be truly asynchronous? Or, you know, if there's working parents, for example, how can they adjust their schedule or adjust their workload, or what can they do to really help make sure that they're available to their children when they need to be? And I wonder if more people would be a little bit more relaxed at their job and not looking for a new one all the time, if they had those type of policies in place.
It's good advice. Excellent.
So exactly. I love that, Elise. Well, you know, as we kind of, maybe we've kind of come to the end of our discussion, but you want to give a shameless plug about your company, what you do, since you've been talking about it, you've started it. Sounds pretty neat. Yeah. You want to tell everyone about you?
Wheels Up Collective is a marketing collective that really is mostly senior marketers that kind of can come in right away and start working. There's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of training that's needed. All of us have at least 15 years experience in marketing. Some of us in only startups, some of us only in kind of enterprise companies, some of us across the board. So we really can kind of hit every type of facet of size of company. And our sweet spot tends to be startups and kind of the small to mid enterprise companies where they either don't have a marketing team at all and we kind of come in as their marketing team and sometimes even like act as a CEO or I'm sorry, a CMO consultant for the team, or have like a smaller medium, which they have a marketing team, and then we are their on-demand marketing project type of execution arm. So really what we like to focus on is not just your traditional marketing of, oh, we need to have this for demand gen. It's really that content is king, first off, and that how do we, great, you can make all this great content, but then what? How does that get out there? How do you see it? How does that drive leads? How does that help your pipeline? And also analytics. I feel like there's so many companies that they spend all this money on marketing and they don't track what the efforts are or what, you know, their demand gen. They might be creating all this content and spending all this money on ads, but they actually don't know how that is driving pipeline, and they don't really even know how to forecast properly. So we kind of come in and kind of help build all of that for some of the smaller companies. And I think really, I mean, we are a boutique digital marketing agency. We can do everything across the board from, you know, like I said, content to we do a lot of the marketing ops set up and or clean up in some cases, and demand gen programs, as well as a lot of consulting too. We're finding that, you know, people are trying to hire right now, and especially a startup who has never had a marketing person, we can kind of help them come in and figure out, okay, what should your marketing org look like? How can we help your team succeed? How can we help you find the right person? And in some cases, we've even been on interviews with their marketing team. So really, we can help almost any marketing need that the company has. And we are really excited to just keep growing. And we need to find team members. So content marketers, especially long form content marketers, and marketing ops people, we're always looking for. And I think, you know, our goal, like I said, is just to really have this wonderful culture and atmosphere where people feel empowered in their own work. And they also know that we value a work-life balance, and we value kindness. And we also value, you know, just being like happy at work and having work kind of integrate into your life versus your life integrating into your work.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's I appreciate the stories today and hearing about your journey. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Elise. As always, you know, you can listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast. Go to quitYourCrappyJob.com, sign up for our newsletter, and obviously hit the subscribe button on YouTube and your podcast places to listen to us. So thank you, Elise. Thank you, Jeff. And I guess we'll call it a wrap.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Quit Crappy Job. Find us on YouTube at Quit Your Crappy Job. Contact us at quityourcrappyjob@gmail.com. Music is provided by Kelton Levitt. He can be reached at kelton.levitt@gmail.com.